He was also conscious of what he called contextual correction, an odd phenomenon that made him wonder whether his problem was, in fact, located in his brain rather than his ears. If, say, there was only a flute or a piccolo above a bass, it sounded strikingly out of tune. But when there was orchestral richness, a continuum of tones and pitches, the distortion was scarcely noticeable. Why, if it was only a question of a few hair cells, should this correction occur? Was there something happening with him neurologically too? These distortions were very distressing to Jacob and disabling. He found it problematic, under the circumstances, to conduct his own music, for he would think some of the instruments were out of tune, or that the players were hitting the wrong notes when they were not. It was not as easy, either, to compose, which he tended to do at his piano. I suggested, half-seriously, that he get his piano or synthesizer mistuned to exactly the degree needed to counterbalance his perceptual distortions. This way, it would sound normal to him, even if it sounded out of tune to everybody else. Neither of us was quite certain of the logic of this, whether it would help him to compose or only exacerbate the problem. I also wondered if his hearing aids could be purposely mistuned, but he had already discussed this with his audiologist, who felt that the erratic and unpredictable character of his distortions would make any such effort impossible. While Jacob had managed very well when he had experienced only high-end hearing loss, stronger hearing aids had compensated for this, he had become worried when the distortions began, fearing that they might put an end to his conducting, to say nothing of undermining the pleasure of simply listening to music. But in the 3 months since the distortions had started, he had made some accommodations. For instance, he would work out high passages on the keyboard below the distorting range, then notate the music in the correct range. This allowed him to continue composing effectively. He could do this because his musical imagery and memory were intact. He knew how music, his own music and others, should sound. It was only his perception of music that was distorted. It was Jacob's ears and not his brain that had suffered damage. But what exactly was happening in Jacob's brain? People have compared the cochlea, the spiral organ, to a stringed instrument, differentially tuned to the frequency of notes. But such metaphors need to be extended to the brain as well, for it is here that the cochlea's output, all 8 or 10 octaves of audible sound, are mapped tonotopically onto the auditory cortex. Cortical mappings are dynamic and can change as circumstances alter. Many of us have experienced this, getting a new pair of glasses or a new hearing aid. At first, the new glasses or hearing aids seem intolerable, distorting. But within days or hours, our brain adapts to them, and we can make full use of our now optically or acoustically improved senses. It is similar with the brain's mapping of the body image, which adapts quite rapidly if there are changes in the sensory input or the use of the body. Thus, if a finger, for example, is immobilized or lost, its cortical representation will become smaller or disappear entirely, the representations of other parts of the hand expanding to fill its place. If, conversely, the finger is used a great deal, its cortical representation will enlarge, as happens with the braille reading index finger in a blind person, or the fingers of a string player's left hand. One might expect something similar to happen with the mapping of tones from a damaged cochlea. If high-frequency notes are no longer clearly transmitted, their cortical representations shrink, become narrow and compressed. But such changes are not fixed or static, and a rich and varied tonal input can serve to re-expand the representations, at least while the stimulus lasts, as Jacob had found out for himself. The power of context is equally clear in the visual sphere. The retina, like the cochlea, is mapped systematically on the cerebral cortex, and damage to it, or edema beneath it, can cause strange distortions of vision, sometimes a warping of horizontal and vertical lines, as if one is looking through a fisheye lens. These distortions may be very noticeable if one glances at individual objects – A rectangular picture frame may appear both curved and trapezoidal, or a cup or saucer bizarrely deformed. But these distortions diminish or disappear if one looks at a landscape or a rich visual scene, for context helps the cortex normalize its retinal mappings. In such a situation, some rectification may also be possible using other senses. A straight-edged windowsill, for example, may look wavy due to retinal deformation, but if one draws a finger slowly across the windowsill, the visual distortions disappear when the finger tells the brain that the edge is straight, but the distortions will then reappear behind the finger once it has passed. Visual concentration alone is much less effective. Seeing a triangle bulge in a non-Euclidean way, as if inscribed on a curved surface, one cannot force it, using knowledge or willpower, to reassume its proper shape. Bits of retinal image, it seems, cannot be retuned as easily as pitch distortions from a damaged cochlea.